So again, linked to that, we talk about safeguarding people, the people, your kids, your support and services of which you are part of the service. Be open and honest. Yeah, if you're feeling a bit of a red flag about what you're doing, or, this is not, again, a tricky one, but you know, this is what my job is to raise this, or someone else is doing, you need to let people know. Right? Doesn't mean automatically it's wrong. It's Peter saying, doesn't mean automatically it's wrong. Either what you're doing or someone else is doing. If you feel a bit uncomfortable, I'm not sure that's the best approach. You often feel tricky in whistleblowing, isn't it? You know, it's always. But if whatever is happening, if you feel uncomfortable and they know you've seen it, you've said that's okay. And if some say that hits the fan, I said it would. Well, Nick knew, he saw me, he didn't say anything. You're complicit really in agreeing with that. As I say, just by raising concern doesn't mean it's illegal, doesn't mean it's wrong. There may be a whole range of reasons to why it plays out. And again, if that was happening to my loved one and I saw someone, I want someone just to raise it. If you can, it might be with the person. I don't understand, that's tricky on occasions, isn't it, for a whole range of reasons. If not, have I informed someone? Yeah, and it's not about, risk is dobbing, isn't it? Dobbing someone in, dobbing our colleagues in. Most of the time, it's okay, now that's the reason, all right, great. Yeah, most of the time, you won't need to be doing those things. All right, and it's getting a comfortable space, it's a tricky one. I understand that, but I raise that deliberately because that's my role. Really, to say, let's be open and honest. If we're not uncomfortable about what we're doing or others are doing, then it's a red flag. It doesn't mean, or it's a better phrase, orange flag. Right, some obvious things that we know are wrong, and then we definitely need to let someone know. Those orange ones where we're not sure. Yeah, preference wherever possible to have a conversation with the person. That was cheeky. Felt a bit uncomfortable about that. And that's hard. Most people really, really struggle with that, so you're not alone. Right, that's great environments, great cultures when we're okay with being questioned. If we don't take it personally, because we all want to get better. And that's a journey for different people and different organisations, because it is. Yeah. Best organisations, that's what they can do. Paperwork. External people. Yeah, because we can all end up in our own little bubbles. Okay? Pluses to that, there can be downsides to that. Yeah, so being aware of those bits as part of it. Yeah, as I say, you rarely want it to be just your decision, because then all the responsibility sits with you. In that moment, you do your best. If it's an emergency, never happened before, then you check in with someone else as part of it. Because the other risk with banning things or saying no touch or illegal bits around that is people go, oh, I had to do it for potentially a really valid reason, but they then don't tell anyone because they're worried about getting into trouble. And that's not great, it's not healthy or helpful for any of us, is it, for in that situation. Again, if my thinking is, I would want someone else to do that, if that was my loved one, we're highly likely to be doing the right thing. Highly likely. Alright, we talk about incidents now. So why might I talk about good enough paperwork rather than perfect paperwork?
Puts a lot of pressure on people if you have really high expectations.
Yeah. A, there's no such thing as perfect. Alright, and there's quite a few teachers out there, I'm always thankful I was never one of those, who aim for perfection. And spend so many hours trying to make things perfect. I'm not decrying you, I'm not knocking you, because it's wonderful. But there is a risk you want to get things perfect. And there's no such thing, and it becomes too long. Too unwieldy as part of it. So good enough, horrible word, horrible thought, but good enough to protect you if it went to court, if there are allegations, if there are investigations. So the things I'm going to share with you are lessons learned when people haven't done some of these things. Alright, then find themselves in serious trouble. And largely, not 100%, largely they've ended up in serious trouble because they haven't got any paperwork to back up what they're doing while they're doing it. A bit like, as you say, 130 instances yet no plan. That's not good enough, is it? You know, we should have plans around kids who need that level of incidents. We need, otherwise, what are we doing? We're all making it up as we go along. It's not great. Yeah, so a bit around, unfortunately, the sad bit, saying nearly all of us hate the documentation. How do we make it good enough to do what we expected to do, need to do, and keep us all safe? Which is a tricky job at occasions. It's an easy job, we don't need to do any paper, but it isn't. It's tricky. You know, what is a restricted practice, what isn't a restricted practice, what do we report? The first thing I talk about with this one is what is an incident? Agree in your environment, you might already have done so, what is an incident? Because the risk is we all have different tolerance levels. No, I don't count that, that's alright. Could be swearing, could be scratching, oh, I don't count things. I'm not saying you should or shouldn't either of those either. But agree, because otherwise, John is in one class and we get 130 incident records, goes to another class and gets 5, and yet he's doing exactly the same things. Alright, so it's agreeing, what do we count? There's some obvious ones, but again, there's that grey area of what point. So, agree, what do we need, when do we need to report? At what point is it? And they're good conversations to have. You know, and again, otherwise, you know, I count it as an incident when I'm had a bad night's sleep, because I'm a bit tired, a bit cranky. When I had a great night's sleep, oh, I'm counting that. Because we're humans, right? So we count it when we're cranky or we're tired, it's happening all the time. It's exactly the same behaviour when we're a bit tired, a bit run down. We say it's, you know, we say it's never happening, we say it's always happening, and yet it's exactly the same. So we need some data, something to give us a sense of are things getting better or are they getting worse around all of this. Some of it is around language, yeah? And this isn't using language to protect people who are doing what they shouldn't do. It's protecting people who are doing the right things but write themselves into problems. Yeah, because inadvertently, and certainly some incident records, some homeschool communication books, I thought, no wonder that parent is now really irate because of how it was written. It's not about not writing it, it's how we write it. Yeah, to me, as objective as possible. Okay? So, restrictive practices wherever possible, let's put to one side, just for now. What about, you know, therapies and personal care and that bit? You know, the way it was written is about keeping people safe. You know, did it to keep that person safe, me safe, other people safe. It's part of how we keep people safe in our environment. What about a parent who says you're not allowed to hold, touch my son or daughter? Where do we stand? They say, not allowed, not giving you permission to. Duty of care. They can't, they can say that. We have to have a good reason to do it. They can't take away our duty of care. We have a legal responsibility to keep that person safe. And if we think, we believe we need to physically have contact to keep them safe, then we have to do it. Alright, same as potentially if a parent say, oh, he gets a bit mouthy, he's clipping around the head. That's the flip side though, isn't it? Yeah? We can't give us the right to assault their kids. They can't take away our legal responsibility. Alright, hopefully, and there are a small number of parents, if it happens in your school, it feels like the end of the world because it takes up so much time. Small number of parents who are unreasonable. The vast majority are reasonable, but they, unfortunately, the system teaches them to have to fight for everything, so they can come in a bit combative, can't they? I mean, you're not doing that, you're not doing that. When we explain when we're going to do it, how we're going to do it, why we're going to do it, how we're going to reduce that, the vast majority of parents will understand that. Yeah? Yeah, there are exceptions out there, but they are, thankfully, thin on the ground, but they do take huge amount of resources when they are unreasonable. Yeah, and they don't have a right for their kid to come here. They have a right for their kid to be educated. They can't demand that young person comes here, for example. And it's horrible if you're in that sort of thing. You know, it's a really tricky situation. So partly for me, it was always about, as we were showing parents, as we were potentially coming along, letting them know. You know, on rare occasions we may need to do this. This is when we, you know, appropriate touch. This is when we may have physical contact. If it's around behaviour, if it's around unsafe behaviour, we'll be in touch. Put a plan in place. We have to show the parents, sometimes put the parents in the restraint. So they knew what it looked like, felt like, etc. Because, you know, what is restraint? You know, most of the time you see it on the TV with someone with a neck, knee on the neck, or, you know, hogtied or whatever else, horrendous restraints. So that's a parent's frame of reference, isn't it? You know, why would they know? There are ways to do that without hurting, that are calming, etc. You know, so it doesn't say it goes away, but they can't say, well, they can say no, but then it's a conversation, is can we meet the needs of that young person? Can we keep them safe? Can we keep others safe? It's tricky. you know, the less you have of those, the better. So it's about relationship building, isn't it? What was the safest, what do I believe was the safest option? And sometimes it isn't, and it's our best attempt, our best chance at that. So I'm not going to go into the detail, but I'm not asking you for the detail. What did you notice in your conversation with the person, you, person on person? What did you notice about the conversation? Different perspectives.
Yeah.
Very few, if any of you, will have written down exactly the same things. That'd be a bit spooky. Alright? Yeah. So that's the point of this, because that's probably almost the worst possible policy to have. Write down in as much detail as what happened and why. Alright, so now we're going to unpack why I'm saying that's a dreadful policy. It's a policy, that's a good policy. Alright, but it is. So there's a few bits there. And the other bit, I added a bit of pressure. I give you a real short time. Pressurise you. Yeah, which again, we'll talk more about timings around incident reports as well. So there's numerous factors there that are poor practice. Alright, don't do that. So one is to point out is we watched a short clip, one point of view, wasn't there? We all had to watch from the camera point of view. If you're there, lots more information your brain is taking in. Alright, humans are the least reliable eyewitnesses. Because our brain is designed to fill in the gaps. To make us sound confident, whether we're not, or whether we remember or not. Sometimes people make it up, but largely they don't know they're making it up. Right? Pick a bit of information. How many people were really, really focusing on the young kid?
Yeah.
Many, many are, aren't they? Part of that, I think, is an actual nurturing. I've seen that before. Stuff the adults, but that's all my kids. All right, naturally it comes out of left field, doesn't it? Part of that. Now I could, we're going to go into that, ask you sort of thing, okay, tell me in detail who was involved in that incident, what were they wearing, what do you think they were thinking, who, whether they jotted it down, but at least thought it, thought, oh, young kid there with their mum. No idea. Could be the auntie, it could be a friend. How we have put assumptions. Yeah, we make assumptions about things. Oh, he deserves to get hit around the head with terrible music. Well, thank God for that. Yeah, so these are the sorts of things that play out. Why didn't he move away? Well, these are bizarre things that happen in people's heads sometimes. He may have been sat there first, waiting for a phone call, the person wheels his thing up, starts saying, I was here first. It's okay, isn't it? It's amazing how people get locked in, don't they, about things. And some of you might thought, yeah, fair enough, it was dreadful. He deserved that. But others might thought, oh no, I quite like the music. Whatever else it is. Yeah, it influences what we see and our perceptions of it. So let's unpack that bit.
Some of were involved in the incident.
Yeah, absolutely. Even harder. Exactly. Even harder to remember if it happened to you, yeah, or you're involved in it, because not only are they at high levels of arousal, so are we likely to be. Yes, yeah, how long did it last? So the best advice, and we'll talk a bit more about this, is if someone asks you, if you don't remember, say I don't remember. The risk, it sounds obvious, but we think, oh, I want to sound confident, I should remember, so I feel it. Your brain goes, okay, yeah, that was near enough, I'm sure. Alright, so if you don't know, you don't remember, say around that. And not, it's not about conveniently forgetting something that you shouldn't have done or shouldn't have happened. But the risk is our brain does. Alright, so much information is flooded with, it's designed to cut out most of it. Alright, because otherwise, and that's why some of the young people you support struggle, don't they? Because their brains aren't cutting out some of that information. How your clothing feels on you. Sitting on the chair or whatever else it is, that's part of their potential challenge. So, bits of information around incidents. So, in our pocket. So, how soon after an incident are you expected? Apologies to Pete, I'm about to say disagree with what the policy is. How soon after an incident are you expected to fill in say, put it on one school or fill in an incident record. You might not know. As soon as possible. All right, what's the risk of as soon as possible? Right. So we suggest having a number. Because as soon as possible for me might be 3 weeks. For you, it might be now. All right, so we suggest, I'm not saying this is law or anything else, 24 hours. All right, now if put my school principal hat back on, now if someone had witnessed something or been involved in something, I want them to have a quick no before they go home. So it might not pull it, might just let them know. Otherwise, I could have a kid go home or a parent phone and I know nothing about it. That's not useful or helpful. So some parents go, okay, I'm going to phone them quick before Johnny gets home. Just to let them know. Yeah, something's happened. We don't know all the ins and outs yet. But make sure we get back in touch with you within 24 hours. Yeah, that's helpful. But, you know, you might not know all the detail. The risk is, do it before you go home. It happens just as they're leaving and you've got to go to get the kids or do something else. So you're still heightened emotions. Yeah, so 24 hours, we believe, absolute truth, is a reasonable time to things to have settled down and not too long that we've forgotten everything. But we write down what we remember, and that's it. Like people ask you for more, you say, I don't know, if you don't know. They say, our brain, we want to appear confident, so we end up making it up if we're not careful. Structured recording forms, isn't it? Yeah, so we're not, and we believe, we've got a big believe in checklists, a lot of them have check boxes. Yeah, what was the behaviour? And it names the behaviours that people generally face. Because the risk is we use emotive language, don't we? About the behaviour. Or emotive words about the young person who did the behaviour. And we're guessing. It doesn't excuse the behaviour. But we're guessing how they're feeling. Because we don't know for certain how anyone's feeling. It's hard enough to sometimes know how we're feeling if we're not careful. Never mind someone else. As I say, that's where sometimes I have irate parents in touch when I read what had been written in the communication. Yeah, I'd be pretty hacked off if I read that about my son or daughter. So I say it's not about not saying it, it's how we say it. Agreeing how we communicate. Some parents say, can you just let me know on a weekly basis rather than every day? It's not nice to know your son or daughter is attacking someone every day, unless they want to know. So it's not about not telling them, it's agreeing that process around all that. A lot of incident records don't include the de-escalation. Yeah, in nearly all cases, we've tried loads of strategies. They haven't worked, that's the reality. So we listed all our de-escalation strategies and people ticked them. Yeah, I tried distraction. Yes, I tried moving away. Yeah, I tried to, you know, pat them on the shoulder because that often works. Then looked at a lot more considered approach as opposed to I just restrained them, right? Just the incident. And the checklist is there. Nothing else, it prompts and reminds, oh, I should have tried that, I forgot to do that on this occasion. Mm. Yeah, and it's there to make it as simple as possible. Yeah, quite right. So briefly, exactly, from our memory, there is never a single truth. And our truth is the right one and everyone else's is the wrong one, of course. But you give it your best attempt. This is what I believe happened. Yeah, not lost in the why at this stage, certainly not in the paperwork. You might have that conversation, but it's not paperwork because it's assumptions. And if it ends up with investigation, if it ends up in court, lawyers are very clever at twisting those things to end up our fault, whether it was our fault or not. Yeah, horrible thought, hope you never have, never will, but some people do. Yeah, absolutely. There needs to be recognition of that. The other thing, the other reason, so what? Let's before we look at this one, what are the reasons that you think that generally incidents are vastly underreported in special schools? Time, pressure of time, so again, that is how you make it as simple as possible. It's tricky, but it is. What else? It happens all the time, so you have to get desensitized, just accept it.
Bad internet.
Bad internet, oh god, it's gone down, there he goes, it's dropped out, we're going to start, yeah, look, the other reason I think sometimes if nothing happens as a consequence, what's the point? Nothing changes, why bother? So these are bits, is we need to find ways of you know, doing those bits, making it good enough, making it time efficient as possible, etc. Making sure there's some process of feeding back after. And we'll talk more about that a bit later because it is tricky. Again, it should be used to inform the plans that young people have. If they have a plan, either we need to write a plan or check, is the plan still current? I'm reading plans that are 1 year, 2 year, 3 years old. Why are they still the same? Because something's not working. Things should adjust. There might be minor changes, but if things are exactly the same, something's not working if they've still got that behaviour. So we either need to fine-tune it, we need to adjust it or change it. So risk assessments, we talk about formal, foreseeable risk assessments, about activities, environments, some individual young people whose behaviour presents risk. There's an expectation, we have a risk assessment around that. What we do to eliminate it, what do we do to reduce it, what do we do if it does happen. But then also, on occasions, even with that, we're going to have to do dynamic risk assessments. And you will do these lots of times, you're just not calling them that. But if it ends up in an incident where we say, I did a dynamic risk assessment and felt this was the safest option. Again, we just have to justify what we did, so it's not get out of jail cards by saying those, but it's saying I stopped and thought before I acted. And 99% of the cases we did. Alright? So it's a considered response. Still might have gone wrong, but we stopped and thought and felt that was the best option. We have to justify it. We talk to people about that. I don't know if you have or haven't, but I think it's a good thing to think about, actually, spending a bit of time, and lots, about how we write incidents. So you can pick up an incident or identify an incident and as a group say, all right, we're individually going to write incident records here, and then just compare them. So it's not about protecting people doing bad things, but the police and people like that are trained in how to write incidents. Often in schools, and I never did in my school, we don't train people, we just expect people to be able to do it. How do we help people say what needs to be said without it being taken the wrong way or, you know, going to be received in the wrong way? So I think it's worth thinking about if you haven't already done it as part of that. Yeah, so what we want to do, what we hopefully do, want to do, stop and think, what have I done to help calm the situation down? The balance, so if there's an obvious course of action where there is no risk, we take it, and we do that all the time, but in many situations there's risk about doing something or not doing something. So working that out, what do I think is the balance of risk, which, what do I think is the best interest of that young person against other young people and myself and other staff, the balance of risks around that, then choose. In terms of, terms of support plans, again for us, a bit of information around this is making sure includes the positive side of that young person, not just the negative side of that young person. The risk is some positive, well, behaviour support plans, if you didn't know that person, a lot like the devil incarnate. They've got some pretty horrible behaviour, some of them, you know, hazardous and harm people and whatever, smearing and whatever else they might do. Where's the balance? So that they're never always doing that. No one is always doing the wrong thing. So where have we got a sense of, if I don't know the young person, the upsides of this young person rather than just the downsides of this young person? Oh, a little bit. Yeah, let people know what the risks are. How do we, what don't we do? What do we do generally that works? And again, this is absolutely thrown out as a challenge. Because I don't know your young people, but I've got a sense of the range of abilities, cognitive abilities they may have. But how are we involving the young people in this plan? And sometimes it is we're not because. Right? But again, without knowing your young people, I'm guessing some may be able to be involved in some way. Because it is a plan about them, so it's good to think about, are we including them? Because then, when someone says, has Johnny been asked about his plan, or has he been included, we've got a good answer as to why they haven't, or how they have. Yeah? Because it is about them, it's part of it, reviewed regularly.